Support for Commodity Week Online comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the February 15 edition of Commodity Week. Ethanol plants are coming back online, and livestock feeders are on the hunt for good corn. So why the lower market? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with EFG Group Steve Erdman from Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. Our website is brand new. Come check it out. We hope you like it as much as we love it at willag.org. And don't forget to dial in Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday next week for the final set. They're dwindling fast of our tickets for the all-day Ag Outlook, the 5th day of March. That's a Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The number to call is 217-333-7300.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Again, our panelists in studio today, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. Let's open with this question. End users, Brian Stark, pushed basis to attract fresh bushels this week. Still, the corn market is drifting lower. Why the divergence?
Well, I think there's a couple things in play, Todd. One, if you look at domestic consumption over the last 4 to 6 weeks, we've seen ethanol plants start to shut down, go offline. We've also continued to see anemic exports. But I really think the biggest factor in the last week, starting with the last week's USDA report, was simply the funds deciding to bail out of the market. And that has more to do with the decline in corn, I think, than maybe a fundamental-based reason.
And Chuck Shelby?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's another negative of that because in the last 3 to 4 years previous to this year, they've been buyers of the market, which helped out our crop insurance. And this year, they're doing the opposite and pushing this market lower. So funds exiting the building.
And Kurt Kimmel.
It's a definitely good situation to be in compared to the wheat market several years ago when we had a $2 divergence where the cash was under the board. Now we got cash above. I don't think we need to call for an investigation on this, and we'll take it. But no, they pretty much the demand's there on the cash side fundamentally or technically. There's a lot of future selling here. The cash is going to remain somewhat strong, and I think that's the theme as we move along and through here. Basis should improve, especially in a new crop as we approach harvest later on down the road.
Brian, you mentioned the funds. Barclays, of course, announced this week that it will be, or maybe already is, exiting the commodity markets. Do you suppose the liquidation of those long-only funds was truly behind this move? Apparently so. And is there more fear yet to come from them?
Well, I think there's always a fear of continued liquidation if you see the outpouring of money that's going into our stock market, the S&P and the Dow being close to an all-time high here, closing over 14,000 this past week, not being able to withstand that. But I think as you go forward, you're going to find some fundamental support, as Kurt said, that stocks are still exorbitantly tight domestically from a feed usage, and also I think you're starting to see some ethanol plants with the break come back online as well.
Corn market this week, by the way, had a high in the March contract at $7.13¾. Its low on the week in the corn was $6.87¼. Settlement for the March down 10¼ at $6.98¾. December futures were off a quarter cent at $5.63. EIA has a reporting a glut of ethanol has begun to abate, I think, and that four plants now have come back online in this last week. I suppose that's something to do with the RBOB to ethanol spread, which is at its widest point since 2010. If the plants are sourcing corn and they truly went offline for lack of availability, then who's not getting it at the moment?
Well, I think it's an ebb and flow. I think the end users buy when they need it. In our local area, we'll see one location get a hot basis for a while, and then it switches over to somebody else. So it's buy as you need, and then you back out of the market.
Should livestock feeders, Kurt, think about locking in prices now for the second and third quarter needs? And you can divide that six-month period from April to September, however you see fit.
We feel they need to use breaks in here to actually lock in cash inventory, because as we move along in here, especially in the eastern belt, a lot of this corn was moved due to aflatoxin fears. So it's going to be kind of tough gathering inventory. So we recommend using the break in here to get the physical locked in or contracted ahead. And what we like doing to make you feel like you're not buying the high here in case we do drift lower is put a hedge on that. On paper here, so you can make up the difference there on that. So, yes, but mainly the cash side.
I think the real difficult situation, I think we look at this market, the real tightness comes as we move forward. We got to remember it's only February here. We're trying to get ahead of ourselves, I think, but we are going to really tighten things down as we move into spring planting time. I think the end users will try to buy corn in before we get in the field, and I was trying to get it caught and bought if I was a livestock feeder.
There are kind of spits and spurts as to when the market has wanted the corn and when they have said, well, that's enough for the moment. When's the next one come?
Well, I think as we get closer to April, May, as Chuck said, when guys get busy in the field is when it's going to feel exorbitantly tight. And I could see a scenario where it's actually decent margins for ethanol plants in the summertime, even though we are tight on stocks. But the problem is going to be, no matter what you can pay, there's not going to be any corn around to buy.
How do you see that scenario unfolding where they have a decent margin in the summertime?
Well, I think from a standpoint of you're going to find a situation where a lot of plants will shut down again when they can't source corn. So for the plants that try to continue to run, as we saw in the last week, when plants did go down the last 4 weeks, margins did improve to a point now where you said four plants are starting to come back online. And I think that scenario will play out this summer where you'll have more shut down. And for the few that stay in it, margins will be better, but they may struggle to source their inputs.
I'm going to stay with you and then go across the board with everybody. So do you see a difference in old crop and new crop corn very much in terms of where they're headed at the moment? Can old crop corn, and the question really is, how long can old crop corn hold up new crop corn if we plant 97, 98, 99, 100 million acres and we have a normal start to the growing season?
Well, I think it's dependent on a couple of things. One, the stocks report March 28th is huge, and I think there's this 300 million bushels that's we've been missing for the last six or seven stock reports. And if we're below expectations, I think old crop corn can lead. The counteract to that is if the wheat relationship to corn continues to narrow, and you could see some replacement from wheat that would allow old corn to sag back.
Well, it's all about the bull spreads, and as you look forward, nobody really cares about new crop at this point if you're really in need of corn. But I think the focus will shift the deeper we get to spring. You know, it's still a big debate how many acres it is. Is it 96? Is it 100? That's an unanswerable question at this point, and certainly the weather.
Definitely two different markets. Like Chuck said, you know, the bull spread in through here. The spreads were actually destroyed here over the last two, 3 weeks, but we look for the spread to kick back in. We look for the old crop to maybe trade as much as 225 over the new.
Soy complex now, bean futures, March contract, 14.50 and three quarters was the top for the week. The low at $14.05, settlement price here at $14.24.5, down 28 cents. November beans at $12.56 and three quarters were down 20 and a quarter. I'd like you to think just a bit about South America at this time, because not only do they have a pretty good-sized bean crop coming out of Brazil, a record-sized bean crop out of Brazil, tougher out of Argentina, but from Brazil they have a fairly large corn crop coming on as well. And not more than a decade ago, we were thinking, can Brazil raise a soybean crop? Can they become competition for the United States? And consider that possibility in corn as it relates to the export market.
Well, I think they can become a competitor, but the reason the size of their corn crop has become so large is their second base crop, the safrinha crop, and that's so dependent on when you get it planted. Obviously, that time frame is this month because their rainy season tends to end around the middle of April. And so, obviously, that being time-sensitive will go a long way to determine the size of their crop, but as they produce more in future years, they can become a competitor.
Well, I think one of their biggest problems has always been and is their infrastructure. It's kind of like a farmer at harvest. If you don't have enough trucks to get it away from a big combine, it doesn't really matter. That's what's going on down there now. So, you know, you need all the components together to make it work. So they're a competitor, but look how many boats are lined up right now.
It's a ways down the road. This past year, remember, they came off a real short crop. They got a huge livestock base to use that corn for there. So it's probably longer term than near term.
What do you think about the soybean market at this time?
Well, it's in a trading range. We went and tried to test some highs here a week ago, just couldn't do it. I think we're sort of range-bound in here until we see how fast the crop comes out of the southern hemisphere. Next week's going to be real important to see if the Asians come forward to get some additional inventory before they start shipping out the southern hemisphere.
I would agree with what Kurt said. I think it's big coming off a China holiday to see if they increase their purchases and from where. It'll depend on logistics in South America. But we did see some cancellations this week. So is this just the game that China's playing, or are they really starting to back off what they bought from us and switch those buying to South America?
Brian mentioned the holiday in China. Was that part of the reason the market was lower this week?
I think it's part of it. Psychologically, you know, when they're not there, the market falls back, and we see that a game they play back and forth of canceling, and then they buy more the following week or down the road.
Of the products, which do you think is the stronger?
When you look at the soybean side equation, I think the oil is going to be a leader as we go forward, especially with EPA looking to make more blend of biodiesel. So I think in the future it's about oil.
You agree with that?
I would agree with that.
And you as well?
Yes.
You can look in the FarmDoc website. You can find out that Daryl Gwynn's got Irwin agreed, too. They posted to the FarmDoc Daily website this week at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu if you haven't read it someplace already. So let's take up some of the rest of the things. March wheat this week, 759.5 on its top. The bottom at 722.5. Settlement price down 14 at 742.25. July at 751, 11 and three quarters lower. You mentioned that by the time we get to the summer months, if wheat and corn are fairly close in price, there could be substitution. But I'm wondering whether there will be a wheat crop. It got off to a really rough start in the West.
No, I would agree with that. The hard red wheat country obviously is struggling massively, but at the same time, we've got a comfortable supply of soft red wheat that can and will work its way into the ration in the Southeast consumer if the relationship between corn and wheat warrants it.
I think when you look at that Western crop, it went in horrible shape. You know, they make a big deal about some moisture out there, but it's pretty hard to help a crop that has a horrible stand and it went in such horrible conditions.
A lot of time for wheat. We'll see how it springs up. But the biggest concern, though, is we've lost the spread between the KC and the Chicago here. We need to see that spread kick back in before the trade starts wanting to put premium back in KC.
Pretty soon it'll just be the Chicago and the Chicago anyway.
Chicago.
Chicago A and B.
It won't make as much difference. What are the other things in the marketplace that seem to be making a difference in the corn, the soybeans, the wheat, or the livestock sector to you? Aflatoxin is one of those things that's begun to pop up again.
We haven't seen it as large in our area, I guess, mostly because the producer doesn't have much stored in the bin. Most of it's in the commercial's hands, at least in East Central Illinois in our area. But I think that's a big issue going forward. Cattle numbers are at their lowest in, what, since the 50s? Hog and chicken guys seem to be doing better, but we have to monitor that because that's the sector we have to ration yet to come.
Can you take up those fundamental end users? Because the cattle numbers are lower, the hog numbers are really steady, and it looks like the poultry producers made their adjustments about 18 months ago.
I think they've learned to deal with this. I think, again, in the long run, something to watch in this market is if the western states liquidate cattle, we could see another liquidation phase, which could impact demand for feed as we go forward.
Live cattle futures, by the way, this week had a high of 127.10 in the February, a low at 124.25. Settlement price at 126.50. They were up $5. March feeder cattle at 143.37.5 were down $1.62.5. The lean hogs on the week, 86.67.5 the high, the low at 83.60. Settlement price there, week over week, down $1.87.5 at $84.25. Just a couple of reminders, always. You can drop by our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. The site has changed in the last week, so if you haven't been there recently, drop by. And it also automatically adjusts now if you happen to be on a tablet or a phone, so it looks great on everything. It's at willag.org. Back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Steve Erbman of EFG Group.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Improvement in weather is on the way. That includes some rain in Argentina and dry weather in northern growing areas of Brazil. In Argentina, since late December, rainfall deficits have grown to 3 to 6.5 inches. Widespread rain will finally fall on most corn and soybean fields in Argentina this weekend into early next week. Amounts are expected to range from about a half an inch to 1 inch in southwestern production areas to 1.5 to 2.5 inches in the northeast. The anticipated rainfall will not be enough to erase the moisture deficits that have been building for almost 2 months, but it should go a long way in stabilizing the declining crop. Once the rain ends early next week, dry weather is expected across Argentina for a minimum of 5 days. At least there will be no forthcoming issues with heat stress, as unseasonably cool weather is expected next week. In fact, there is no sign of hot weather for Argentina for the rest of this month. To the north, the front that will bring rain to Argentina will stall out across South Brazil and Paraguay next week. Frequent showers and thunderstorms will likely bring widespread rainfall amounts of 2 to 4 inches. North of there, across center-west and southeast Brazil, mostly dry weather has dominated during the past week, and that will continue into the middle of next week before rain returns later in the week, at least to Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, and Goiás. The dry weather will allow soybean harvesting and second crop safrinha corn planting to advance quickly. Corn planting is behind due to rain prior to this past week. To avoid typically hot and dry weather in April and May, second crop corn needs to be planted by the end of next week. That is your South American weather update for Commodity Week. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This is the February 15 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists include Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. On the phone line at EFG Group in Chicago, Illinois, is Steve Erdman. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. I want you to take a look over the past 2 weeks at the marketplace and tell me whether it was evident in Chicago that companies like Barclays were beginning to liquidate already.
Yeah, I think it was, Todd. I think the managed sector and the fixed money has been leaving our markets for a period of time. I think they've really had a tough time in the last 2 years seeing the kind of returns that they need to see to continue to participate. So I'm really not that surprised that they continue to deleverage.
Steve, how do you feel about new crop prices going forward? Are we going to continue to grind lower as we move closer to spring in a bearish pattern, or do we have some solid footing somewhere in here?
I think you guys said it, Brian. You guys commented on how old crop's holding things up, and I believe that. I think, you know, the corn prices are probably going to catch a little bit of a break now that the ethanol market demand is coming back, and their margins have come back 30 to 50 cents. This bean market, I think, is still problematic because of the amount of beans that we got coming out of South America, and they are logistical problems is the only thing that's holding them back right now. So in terms of new crop beans, I think the market could continue to break down. In terms of new crop corn, I don't see how the old crop can really continue to sustain Dease corn. Dease corn, I think, is until we see some changes in the mindset right now of 97 to 100 million acres, planted acres of corn, and the kind of yields that they're talking about, we're still going to be on the defensive, and rallies were meant to be sold.
Steve, when you look at the old crop corn, can you see a month of maybe March or May when we go into delivery that somebody gets caught because if the basis is so good, somebody says, I'll just take it and forces delivery on somebody who doesn't have it?
I think that's been the talk, Chuck, for probably the last week. The corn spreads have been acting pretty good. The basis is obviously, as you guys commented earlier in the show, has been very dynamic, and it continues to be dynamic even though we don't have an export market. If we get any kind of interest at all, if they have to divert the end user's interest from South America to the U.S. because they're running out of corn and they're having to switch their focus from corn to soybeans and protein, you know, I think it could be beneficial to old crop.
Well, Steve, what would be your number one strategy for a producer on new crop and corn and beans both at this point in time?
I still like bear put spreads. I think, you know, I think our downside is I'm not as bearish as a lot of people out there right now, Kurt. They're you know, still a lot of talk about us being probably $2 too high or $2 too low. And I think the main thing is right now you want to own volatility. Volatility has been getting pressed out of the market, and it's really been a sedate market, as we unfortunately all know, for the past 6 months. And I think there's real potential for the market to move, but if you can get any kind of juice out of the money puts, I think that's one viable alternative, or just being straight long puts, because there's still quite a bit of time to go before we know anything. And I think Brian was talking about the stocks report on the 28th, and then we've got the acreage report right after that at the end of March. You know, those are going to be realization type of things that were coming at us, and we need to see before we can really be assured of what kind of crop we have coming at us.
There are some that suggest the cash market will lead the futures market for quite some time, or have overs in the corn in particular, and that it will be tight enough that it will simply pull the futures higher with it.
Well, I think the market is in a trading range. I think Kurt commented about the bean market being in a trading range. I think the corn market more so at this point in time, until we know more. I think we've got a similar pattern to where we were. We're at a higher price level, but last year, until we knew what the market was really going to, what new production we saw coming at us, I think we're trading a range now between, I'd say, 675, 665 on the downside. Even if we made new near-term lows, I don't think you'd have to be terribly concerned about the market following through because how tight it is in the U.S. We are going from historically tight ending stocks both domestically and in the world market to what is thought to be, at least at this point, a pretty dramatic change, a year-to-year change where our ending stocks are going to significantly increase. So, I mean, I think until we see more realization from some of these numbers, I think we have to be careful about the market. You know, if it does make new lows, I really think it's more range-bound than directional right now.
I'm going to expand a little bit and go back to the delivery question that Chuck was talking about, specifically on beans. My question is, as we get further into the summer, say versus the May and the July contracts, and you have domestic processors that are long futures, but our supply is in South America, how is that going to work from a delivery mechanism?
That's a good question, Brian. I think, you know, with the advent of new deliverable locations along the river, I think it's changed the game, you know, considerably. I guess not to dodge your question, but I think the big key, and I heard you guys all commenting that you think that oil is going to be the leader, and I don't disagree with that, but I think the real question for the bean market right now, at least, given the appetite that China has had and continues to have for protein, is do we need $400 meal? Is there enough change in the available supply of beans in the world that we still need to see U.S. prices at over $400? And I think that's the real question right now. You know, I think it's so tight, or the perception is that it's so tight right now in the U.S., I think we very easily could see the U.S. processor back away from the market as they're displaced with protein supplies from South America. There's some significant crops coming out of South America, and I think Chuck was talking about the logistical problems, and that's the only thing that's holding them back right now. I mean, the vessel lineups and the nominations are getting larger and larger until they can really see a free flow out of South America. It's going to be a problem for us.
Steve, when we know the dry weather in the western states, a dry spring and early planting is generally considered bearish. If it stayed dry, when would you see the market really start to be very concerned about that?
Well, I think they're going to be more sensitive to it than in other years, just because of what happened last year, Chuck. And I know the eastern belts received beneficial rainfall, but, you know, everybody knows we've still got a problem from Texas up into the Dakotas here in the United States. The western belt is dry. There's significant production that comes out of there. The market's already digested, 97, 98 million planted acres, and I really think we're trading, something between 150 and 165 for yield, and I think it is at variable right now. But I think, as we move through March and into March, I think people remember how early we were last year and how screwed up things became. I think, in the next 3 weeks, I think if we don't continue to see some relief out west, or if Nebraska, doesn't start to see some moisture coming into their growing areas, it'll take some of the pressure off of their irrigation. I think we're about 3 weeks away in my estimation.
Steve, can you tell me that the cattle market's done going down and ready to go up now, please?
Well, I think it is, Curtis, because I think yesterday it tried to tell us something and we saw a reversal. And I pay attention to those kind of things. I know people have been pegging the cattle market, and the cattle producer has been getting beat up for the last 7 months. And a lot of people in the trade thought that we needed to see live prices go higher to 140 or something better. And quite frankly, I think the feeder cattle market is the other end of the equation, and that got beat up pretty good in the last couple of weeks, even after we saw that inventory report. But I think the market's trying to tell us we're in for a little bit of bounce here. I think we're seeing some tighter slaughters week to week. I think the projection for next week is for some lighter numbers, but I think people got caught up in getting too bullish, especially in the live market, and a lot of the feed yards were putting more pounds on their steers, and that equated to more tonnage. And I don't think the market was prepared for that as much as everybody was looking for, lighter slaughter numbers.
Steve, thank you so much.
Good to be here. Always, Todd. Appreciate you having me on.
Mm-hmm. Steve Erdman with EFG Group in Chicago, Illinois. A quick final word from our panelist in studio, Brian Stark of the Andersons.
We've talked a lot about setting puts as a floor is a good strategy. Cheapest put on the markets, your crop insurance. Averages tonight are 571, 1301 for beans.
And Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities.
We will have opportunities as producers in 2013. It's just a matter of how we take advantage of them.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Yeah, we recommend going out and buying some cattle and feeders and putting a stop under this week's low.
That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.